I am unashamed. What about you?
Every spot that you could put a person in that duck blind, there was a person there. And we were all ready. Even Godwin showed up today. I hadn't seen Godwin since last duck season.
Well, that took up two spots.
That did take up two spots.
We had my long-lost daughter was seated beside me, so I don't know.
Phyllis is still trying. She's, I mentioned this before, she's the college star that goes to the NFL, and she's still trying to catch up to the speed of the game.
Well, that was interesting. Well, no, she can shoot one, but here's what happened. So the ducks didn't show. Not a lot of wood ducks letting the decoys. It was pretty, you know, but it usually when it's going to be a shoot,
if it had been regular duck season, we'd have killed 30.
Well, right, but I mean they haven't been shot at.
So wood ducks, wrong species.
I think that's an illusion, though. Technically, once you fire a shot, they tend to get smarter.
Well, that's right.
So at 7:40, which we were going to leave at 7:45, I looked down at my phone and said, oh, it's 7:40. Let's give them 5 more minutes. And when I looked up and I heard as I'm looking, whoosh, 3 teal coming wide open straight down into the decoys. So I waited a second. They lit. I waited a second because I knew the cameraman, who's also a rookie, I knew he needed some time to get this on camera because that just happened in 3 seconds. So I waited, and one of them started looking nervous. The middle one started looking nervous, and so I said, do it. But when I said do it, they attempted to get up, and it was just boom, boom, boom.
Now the listeners, and they're thinking, what's he rambling about? What they don't realize is we wait all year. These ducks raise in the Canadian prairies and the Dakotas.
Yeah.
That's where they came from. They're going to the Yucatan and Mexico. They fly over the Gulf of Mexico, and that's where they winter. We're just catching them when they come through North Louisiana. What people don't realize is it's a phenomena worth watching. Just being there and seeing it, because you look up and you look up in the sky and you see 200 blue winged teal, and they just come, just here they come. like a big wind. Yeah. It'll make the hair stand up on the back of your neck because you know how far they've traveled just to get to here. And I mean, they're up the next day, here today, and they look up the tomorrow. Not a sign of one. They all pass through. They just all gather up. But will they have one thing that lets us know that we better be there? And that's if you catch a little coup front, just a little wave coming out of the Canadian prairies, coming on down.
Yep.
Well, you get a pretty good sweeping of the coup front. The wind shifts out of the northwest. It's like turning on a switch, because that's when the action picks up. So you wait all year. It's an exciting thing. But if you've never seen it before or participated, you'd think, what are they doing out there?
Right.
Well,
plus, while I'm at it, just remember, there's just so much mischief that can happen on planet Earth. But a duck blind, you know, with Bibles in tow, is a pretty safe way to spend the morning.
Yeah, we had a good Bible study this morning. And
no profanity, no loud hollering and get people, yeah, 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 no hatred, none of this vitriol, and all that's gone. You're just sitting there quietly drinking coffee.
There was not even any quiet hollering.
No.
Now, that was the sentence levied on us when me and Jep came out of the world and you guys had the intervention. I remember the sentence was, you have to go duck hunting every day.
Yeah. Well, that was part of your repentance.
It was called a house arrest.
That's where we do all of our psychiatric dealings, is in a duck blind.
Yep.
You know, you can't get away. You're there, and you don't know how you got there. You don't even know where you are. So, it
must have been just what you needed, Zach, because now you're quite the theologian apologist. So that those early days of duck blind theology and psychology must have worked on you.
Yeah, it was about the whole period of time. What is it? 60 days of duck season, but you have a 2 week split.
A little break
in
there, yep.
Yeah, so we're talking whatever the two and a half months in an incubator, in a spiritual incubator, That was it was very needed at the time. I'll put it to you that way, because we needed that. We needed to get out of where we were at and get and just be saturated with godly men and the Word of God, and it worked for us.
Yep.
Well, we had the guy on the guy from, I think he was from Oklahoma, was on here, and he does men's groups, and he was talking about that there's a certain amount of just bonding that happens if you put it in a spiritual context. No matter what you're doing, whether you're hunting or different activities, it brings people together.
And you can have a lot of fun without having a lot of evil.
Yeah.
It's more fun to be sober-minded.
Right.
Talking quietly. And I mean, just what you're seeing, birds coming out of the air. I mean, they fly over, they're a jet. And you're like, they light on the water. Now they're a boat paddling around. They dive down to get their food, a lot of them. Now they're a submarine. I mean, whatever department in saltwater dreamed that duck up, I'm just looking at it thinking, no, saltwater didn't make that thing. A jet, a submarine, and a boat all at the same time.
That's right.
And he's flying 75 miles an hour. They've tracked them, these blue-winged teal, 75
Is
miles
an hour. Size
and no feathers leaving him. I mean, all of his feathers are intact. He's good to go. I mean, you get to looking at him, you're like, boy, these things.
So I said he put that to the test, because one was flying right alongside of him on the interstate.
He's told that story 100 times. He's like, a teal flies 71.5 yeah. miles an hour. I was like, well, where'd you get that? He said, because when I was on interstate, when I went to 70, he said there was one just flagging along with him. And he said, Nope. 72. I'd start leaving him. And he said, I can tell you the sustain. No. I don't know why he tells that. I was like, how long did this go on? He's like, oh, he's following me around.
No, hey,
which means, yeah, that's a fact. So what I find fascinating, though, is the presentation. Those ducks came from Canada. Probably they were there yesterday. It wouldn't have shocked me.
They might have traveled 200, 300 miles this morning.
I mean, they're flying so fast. Oh. And I mean, I've been on enough planes to realize you're getting places in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and they look at our presentation, and they thought they were ducks.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Here's, I don't know how many, 6 or 8 men and one woman in a blind. And we were pretty loud at this point of the hunt, because nobody thought this was going to happen. And I even feel the most optimistic duck hunter in the world. Because I had just said, he said, son on the decoy. I said, well, that means it's over, because teal fly early. But sure enough, but they thought those were ducks, which that kind of gets my juices flowing, because there was no doubt they would not have come. How far would you say they were from us?
25
yard. I thought this was a little closer, but yeah, they were not over 25 yards.
And it's not easy to get wild animals to come that close to you when you got that many people.
Yeah. I mean, it was,
of course, the last time we got them, that I guess, I mean, unless y'all have done it the last time I was there, it was like late, almost the last Saturday, I think, of teal season. No weather event, nothing. It's kind of the old deal. In fact, we were shooting a commercial afterwards, so we had a little film crew behind the blind. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Bob DeMoss.
And oh, I remember.
There were like 7 of us there, and I mean, they started coming in bunches of 100.
Yeah, it ruined those people, though, because they were like, we can't believe y'all do this every day. I said, we don't do this every day. You hit a 1 in 10 year happening.
We killed 42 teal in about 15 minutes. I mean, yeah.
It was a whacking.
I'd never seen anything like it.
Right. And I didn't realize that.
Well, I hadn't either. But
it should have been filming instead of hollering.
Well, they weren't really set up to film it. And then Sinky that day left. The kids, he said, well, I thought y'all had another film.
Now, he got offended. He got his feelings hurt because he thought we hired a different camera crew.
But it was somebody for totally different shoot.
I know, but there was miscommunication involved.
By the way, reel it back about 40, 45 years ago, I came in and told y'all were young bucks then, just kids. I said, we're going to film ourselves shoot ducks. And they said, y'all said to me, we're going to do what? I said, we're going to film ourselves shoot ducks, duck hunting. We're going to film it. There's nobody has any kind of footage on duck except Wide World of Sports with Kurt Gowdy
yep.
way back. He's passed on now. but they had a little bit of that in Stuttgart. I said, I think it's what helped sell duck calls if we filmed ourselves shoot ducks.
I think just you said like. We're going to make a movie about duck hunting. I think your original plan.
And y'all laugh. You said, yeah.
Well, you said we're going to make a movie about duck hunting. That's funny.
Well, you know what? Truthfully, though, that was kind of the birth. I know it wasn't the birth of reality TV, but you were doing reality TV before it was cool, because what made your videos stand apart was that they were real.
Right.
You would make fun of. I remember you shooting the water moccasin, and you were doing. You would do stuff that was just.
Yep.
You weren't supposed to do it because it
shock
was,
and
it was
all.
Very,
the first yeah, oh, year, yeah, the first year, we had made a DVD. We sold about 50, and I said.
And that was to everybody down here.
I said, we're on a roll. I said, I told y'all it'd work. So about the
why did
fifth,
nobody believe him? Nobody believed it.
I just kept cranking out a little DVD every year. Well, it got to about number five. I'd made five DVDs. We were having a film shoot. We put it all together. When I got to about number five, I looked back at what number one did, sold 50. In steps Walmart. And stocks their stores, every one of them that has ducks, you know, outdoor stuff. And when they did that, without me really realizing it, they made us a national product, just like that. Well, they could see the duck calls in action. They could see the banner that we're living. They see the ducks. And that's where it started. And I looked up one day, and that long green started coming in. I said, yeah. But at first, it was laughable. Everybody laughed. I didn't laugh. I said, yeah, I'm renting these cameras, and they're coming from Dallas, Texas via a jet aircraft, and I didn't even have anybody to run them. So up around the church, the brothers, I said, can any of y'all know how to work a camera? And they said, well, we never did it before. We could try it. I said, I want to hide you out there and just film what happens. That's all you need to do. That's how we started. And they did, and that's what, then it took off.
Wow.
I was trying to find that. So at one point, somebody told me on YouTube they've got that scene, and I can't remember what number it was from. It was one of the earlier ones where you shot that deer. It was a deer running through the decoy.
They're still talking about that.
I ran into it because
it was right on the line of illegality also. That was another thing, because a lot of states, you can't shoot a deer in water like that. And,
really?
You know, in Louisiana, as long as he's not swimming, you can't shoot a deer while you're ducking.
Like out of a
boat.
But
you can in Louisiana, as long as he's not swimming. I mean, you were just right on the line. Well, somebody saw that and thought, this got to be illegal. I mean, it's like me cleaning the doves in the parking lot. This can't be legal in America. So it called, you know, there's most things that are controversial.
We romanced the story a little bit because after I pulled the shot off, which was a deer running through backwater at about 150 yards left to right, and he stepped down a little hole, and I just nicked him. Well, he took off running. Well, I led him like a duck with a high-powered rifle. I led him about 10 yards. You know, he's way over there. Boom. And he just did a
somersault. A cartwheel.
A cartwheel. Well, then me and Jace, I said, Jace, what do we need to say?
No, Phil, it happened just like it did.
I thought we romanced the story.
No. I said, do you got him over there covered? I saw the deer turn the flip, and I thought, what am I going to say to that? Because this just happened. But I looked over at Phil, and he was sipping on his coffee. And I thought,
like we do this every day.
Well, he didn't say anything. I just said, you got some more of that coffee? And he went, yeah.
It's a once in a lifetime shot. Everybody that's watching it is like, oh my goodness. And then and y'all's reaction was, you got some more of that coffee.
Because he was drinking coffee, which I found ironic. Now, then the next 30 minutes, we tried to say something. Oh, the deer came out. But then when we watched all that,
because
we were the editor,
go with what happened.
We said, just go with what happened. Because they were saying, why'd you ask for some more coffee? I said, because I was so shocked that he just made that shot and he was drinking coffee.
And he wasn't saying that.
And we didn't. We assumed that our cameraman, which was his first day, didn't even get it. I mean, you got to remember that.
But he totally knew. Let's take a break. So, Jace, you like meat, right? Are you a meat man?
Al, it's God's grocery store. I visit it almost daily.
You're not vegetarian or pescatarian, right?
The first time I heard pescatarian, I literally thought there were people from the planet Pesca that we had found.
It was a fish world somewhere off in the universe.
That's what I thought. I was like, oh.
Pesca means fish. So we have some family members that are pescatarian. They only eat fish. They don't eat beef or pork or chicken, but whatever.
They married in.
So one of the things that we love about one of our sponsors, our new sponsors, Good Ranchers, is that they provide American grass-fed beef. Because about 80%, and I didn't realize this until I talked to these guys, of the beef that's sold in the U.S. isn't actually raised here. It's brought in from somewhere else. It's imported, which, you know, I'm thinking, I want some good American beef. And so that's what these guys do. You can sign up and they'll send it to your house on a regular basis, or you can just order from them. But it's really good. They got T-bones, fillets, strips, burgers, better than organic chicken, they call it. So you go to goodranchers.com. And you can buy now or subscribe today, and you save 20% off each box of their meats. Subscribing brings the cost down to less than $5 a meal, so it's very affordable. So you get an additional $20 off and free express shipping if you go to goodranchers.com/Phil or use the code Phil at checkout. That's $20 off, free express shipping, goodranchers.com/Phil. Use the code Phil and get you some good meats. Well, it's kind of like, and I guess it's in the blood, Dad, because Stone tells whenever BK, my granddaughter, your great-granddaughter, at the time she was 11, I mean, but she's a really good shot. Of course, you know, she lined it, you know, he's got her
which
set up.
Which is disturbing to some people.
Yeah, exactly. 11-year-old girl, I mean, she can shoot. But, you know, she's a little kid, so you think she's going to get all, she drops that deer, she just puts her gun down and sits down, never says no jumping around, no high five. She just sits. Of course, you know, Cy was in there with him, and Cy and Jay are high fiving and
now,
all.
Now, that's the first time she cranked up. Now she's a deer killing machine.
Well, so I'm proud of her, obviously, but I'm somewhere with her and I say, this is our deer killer right here. And they'll say, well, how many did you kill? And she said, last year or overall? She killed four last year.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty amazing.
I was kind of, that's why I never really got into deer hunting outside of just for the enjoyment of eating them. Because the first one I shot, I thought, I thought that would have been more exciting.
So the point I was going to make was that it's on YouTube somewhere. Because so now we did the videos, as you said, DVDs, we sold some. But because of the internet now, so millions of people now have seen that one scene because somebody clipped it off of there and puts it on the internet. But all that shows you that, you know, the nature of that early business. You were right.
What's interesting,
you were a pioneer, Dad.
I've never owned a cell phone, so it's kind of weird that everybody gives this report, you know, and I'm like, so it's a foreign object to me.
At this stage of your life, I wouldn't get one. You're defying.
Not going to get one. I don't need that. Everybody I ask, what am I missing? I said, what am I missing if I don't have one? And they stop and they all say, you miss nothing, Mr. Robinson. I'm like, well, why fool with it?
Well, you should have said, well, how come if you lose your phone right now, you're going to go into sheer panic and chaos?
I'm glad, though, everybody else has a cell phone or they wouldn't be hearing what we're now saying.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, there's a, I don't know if y'all probably hadn't seen it, but there's been a big story the last, I guess, about 2 weeks or week and a half of this woman who's a vlogger, just like you, Dad. You're a vlogger. The In the Woods is a video blog format. And she's pretty well known on the internet because she's a little cute girl in her 20s. And so she goes on a trip with her boyfriend out west and she's taking all these videos. And so, you know, a few people are watching, but then all of a sudden she comes up missing.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
So then you're seeing her stuff, all this whole thing. Of course, now it's a murder mystery. What's happened to her? She's, you know, her parents are appealing. So
well,
this thing
her
goes.
Boyfriend's missing now.
The boyfriend shows up, supposedly. Then he's gone again.
So that's a bad
thing. The police never talked to him. Well, they found her body out in the Tetons in the middle of nowhere. And so it was a sad deal. But what I thought about it was that our culture now, the reason America was so interested was because you're watching all our videos and look, it's lovey-dovey there and here they are at the beach and they're here and they're there. And it looked like the perfect picture of a young couple in love. And somehow along the journey, it ends with him killing her or somebody killing her. Somebody killing her.
It's pretty suspicious.
Now they don't know where he is. But I just thought video is what did it. Like, that's what brought all the interest.
Man.
Have you seen that, Zach? Did you see the story?
Oh, yeah. We've kept up with it. It's sad.
Well, let's see if we can give the folks some good today instead of bad, some evil.
Well, but I mean, to Al's point, I think Jesus was addressing that on the Sermon on the Mount. Because you can't know just by looking superficially at people.
That's right.
Even religious people.
Exactly.
I mean, the worst people in this story that we've been reading were the ones who were claiming to be godly.
That's
right.
Yeah. We're in about chapter 7. Do not... This is the way it is on the internet, I'm sure, on Facebook. Do not judge, Jesus said, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you'll be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Boy, that tends to make me not be judgmental of my fellow man. I'm like, point him to Jesus, and he may curse you out, but I say, hey, just think about it.
Well, when I read this,
you get a cussing with some, and others say, man, I never heard that. I need to check that out. So I just lump it all together, but don't hold it against any of them. Mm-hmm. After I read that text,
when
you see
I read
what I'm
this,
saying?
I read this last night, and it kind of hit me that I was like, I think his whole point, when you look at this Sermon on the Mount, where he started with the kind of attitudes you need to have towards God, then he said, I didn't come to, you know, abolish the law, but to fulfill it. I mean, what a statement. And then he starts taking all these things in the law and commenting on it as in to say that he has some kind of knowledge about it that they don't. You know, most people, especially religious people, you commentate on what you think or you interpret what the law is. But here comes this Jesus. He's actually acting like he wrote it. Because he got to some points later on, and he's like, brushed it off. Nah, you don't have to do that. Don't worry about that. So all of a sudden, you start thinking, well, what kind of authority are you claiming to have this?
And then that's what the law keepers kept asking.
Well, then
who gave you the authority?
Well, right. Then he said about the prophets, I came to fulfill what the prophets are written. So you think about all the imagination of people. And what they were looking forward to of the coming Messiah. And then here he comes saying not just that he's the one, but that he's fulfilling all these prophets and all these stories that everybody's gathered around a campfire and told through years and years and years and passed on to generations. And then you throw in statements like this, because what stood out in this statement was when he said, for in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. I mean, if I was standing there, I would thought, well, now who are you to know how I'm going to be judged in the end?
Jace, fast forward 2,000 years right at it. He was born 2021, give or take a year or two. And you say, why are there 25,000 different groups, churches, creeds coming out of one book? You say 25,000 different kinds of denominations because
I think some people miss that.
A lot of people, I believe, Phil, you're right. They're going through life. They're like, well, I'd like to get involved in church, but where in the world would you start?
That's right.
You got everybody, you know, from, I guess one fringe would be a guy with a sign on a street corner saying the end is near.
Some say this all is wrong. Some say this is not wrong. Some say this is right. Some say this is wrong. I mean,
all the way to people in buildings with rattlesnakes saying, here we go.
Oh, yeah.
And then all points in between. But I'm bringing this up about him, not really commentating on the law, but I guess legislating. And then he's fulfilling all these prophecies because he keeps saying that. And then he starts talking about the last judgment and how you'll be judged. Well, it made sense to me where the last two verses of the Sermon on the Mount, after he finishes in verse 28, it says, when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at this teaching. And I'm like, you think? I mean, it was a power-packed sermon because he taught as one who had authority, not as their teachers of the law. So that's when it kind of hit me that you know, when it comes to all these principles, even this, I mean, God is the judge. If you believe Jesus' claims, which we do, then that's really overall his business.
Yeah.
When it comes to the judge.
Well, it's worthy of note that after the don't be judgmental, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye? You're not quite there yet. Let me just in. When all the time there is a plank in your own eye, you hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Now, watch this. Do not give dogs what is sacred, and do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and then turn and tear you to pieces. He's just talking about the personalities among human beings that you're fixing to go up against. And he was lining them out on what to do and what not to do. But you just look at that. That's a pretty tough read.
Well, it is. Let's take another break. So, Zach, I'm hearing the word free a lot these days. You know, free healthcare, free college, free this, free that. Is that you think that's true? Everything's free?
There are no free lunches. That's what I think.
Exactly. I agree. So one of our sponsors is a company called StartMail, and they make the point that, you know, people talk about free email services like Gmail or Yahoo, but they aren't really free, just like all these government programs, because you're giving them information. You know, they're supplying this. You're not giving them money, but they're taking your information and they're selling it to other people, or they have it available to sell. So it makes it not so free. So this company, what they've done is they've created private email, truly private email. Every email can be encrypted, which is really good. When you delete an email, it's actually gone forever. Not like, you know, the other places where it's still out there somewhere. So they will protect your email, which is kind of their thing. Cybersecurity is definitely a risk, and so these guys are going to help you be able to do that. So if you want to start securing your email privacy with StartMail, you can sign up today. You'll get 50% off your first year. You go to startmail.com/unashamed. That's StartMail with a T, start, startmail.com/unashamed. 50% off your first year. And protect your email. And it also shows you that there's going to be some people that just won't humble themselves. Oh, is what I get out of that last little segment. I mean, he looks at that and says, you know, you got to be judicious even. And, you know,
we have a cancel culture going on, and they hear something you say, or they read something you said 200 years ago.
Yeah.
Or you did something 200 years ago, and they will hold it against you the rest of till Jesus comes back.
Right.
I mean, they ostracize you on the spot. I found out where this guy pulled some sinful act because he, and they start there, and they just tear you to pieces no matter what you say.
Right.
You say, man, why don't you just forgive him and move on? I mean, you know, we all make mistakes, you included, right? And they're like, get that Bible out of it. I mean, I've run up on some mean people before.
Well, just looking back at it, at you in the early days, I would say a good illustration of this was, you know, when you first started speaking, you were asked to do duck call demonstrations.
Yep.
And some of those were in fundraising atmospheres, and the alcohol was flowing. And you would go in, you would do your duck calls, but you notice most of the room is drunk. And so to this point here, you realize that, you know, I'm not going to be able to really reach people with what I want to tell them in an atmosphere like that. So you quit doing those.
Yep.
And then you start accepting opportunities to go when people are sober-minded and will listen to the good news. So
yep.
I would say even you realized at some point early
yep.
that you had some pearls here, but you just didn't want to throw them out to people that weren't going to listen.
That's right.
And weren't in a position yep. to listen. So I would say illustratively, that's kind of what he's talking about.
I have to confess, it is kind of fun, though, to share Jesus in a drunk city.
I did it before.
Always
Al, where were we at the gambling place?
Yeah, we were in Memphis, and it was a rap party going on until you got up and
they had a rap
the
band
party.
Well,
dispensed.
And, Willie and I went to a Canadian.
In this case, that I've never seen a party fall apart like that one did.
Willie and I spoke.
You were the buzzkill.
Yeah, he preached them right.
Willie
out the
and
door.
I spoke at a Canadian. It was called the Canadian Woodstock, and it was a country music concert.
Yep.
And I was like, "Well, no, you know, we only got one speech," and they were like, "Fine." This was like day three of it. And so we flew in there, walked out there, huge crowd. And it was just so funny because people were like, "Do I put my drink down?" Well, you know, and some of them were, "Hallelujah." You know, it was just, I don't know. I figured maybe the subconscious will get it. But he did say, don't cast your pearls. I think the version that people remember this version, don't cast your pearls before the swine.
Yeah.
Do you think, according to Jesus, the two greatest texts in the Bible is love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor? You would think people would say, you know, it'd be a good world if we did that. I'm like, it'd be a lot better world. Yeah. We just loved God and loved each other. Well, why don't we try that for a while just to see?
Right.
And they're like, hey, get out of here. You think you're not going to be able to. They just give up on it. They say, no. No.
Well, and I like
get that Bible out of my face.
I like the fact that when Jesus was given this illustration, I think he went back. You know, he worked as a carpenter, you know, for the first 30 years of his life. Yeah. So he understood something about sawdust and planks. You know, that's what he was around his whole time. But it was such a hyperbolic, you know, picture he paints. Like, he's like, you got a plank sticking out of your eye. He said, if you'd get that out of there, you might could help this guy get the speck out.
I thought this was funny.
I thought it was, that's what I'm saying. It was like a humorous.
But people are like, oh, no, it's got to be, you know, just divine order of things. But I'm like, hey, buddy.
I thought it was like a tongue-in-cheek.
You're trying to get
us. Paul did the same thing in Galatians, if you remember, whenever Peter and the Judaizers were wanting to get everyone to be circumcised, and he was basically, Paul's like, oh, yeah, you go ahead and just cut it all off.
Zach,
you
know what I mean? look at the uproar that came my way when I just quoted 1 Corinthians 6, 9, and 10. I just quoted a Bible verse, and I mean,
They didn't know it was a Bible verse.
To your earlier point, I think this is interesting when you talk about the Pharisees, because that's who really is the villain here. But you got to keep in mind, if you're a Pharisee in this day and age, that was a symbol of prestige. Now it's a bad thing because it's always tied to brood of vipers and hypocrites. But now it's a bad word. It wasn't back then. And I think that when people talk about Pharisees today, they want to equate them with church people, which can be true. But really, the marker of a Pharisee, it's in this text here. Here's the marker of a Pharisee is this. They do not dispense grace because they've not received it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it mirrors today in our culture. Man, there's lots of a Pharisaical mindset. Anybody who refuses to dispense grace, that's a Pharisaical mindset right there.
That's right.
If they do that, it's probably because they haven't received grace.
Yep. Yeah, and it takes humility. That's why James said, humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up. So the idea is it's not you lifting you up, it's him lifting you up. But that starts with humility, which
by the way, he gave all this information on how to live, how to behave, how to be while you're on planet Earth. He spent three chapters on it. By the time you get to that, and I keep bringing it up because by the time you get to Matthew 16, Al, he's saying, here's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're going up to Jerusalem, and the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, they're going to mock me, scourge me. They're going to put me on a cross. They're going to kill me. In 3 days, I'll come forth from the dead. And they all looked at each other. The disciples said, do what? He said, yeah, I'm fixing to die. Be buried and raised from the dead. It just seems like he's preparing them in Matthew 4, 5, and 6 on how to behave and telling them what God's like, mm-hmm. and seeing for the first time someone who had actually kept the law of Moses. that they had been under for 1,500 years, all of a sudden you start talking about grace like Zach's talking about. It's a free gift, and you can't earn it. They're saying, are you crazy? That's why he came.
Right.
He said, I'll do this for you, remove your sin, and raise you from the dead, give you immortality, and it'll be free. Right. they were just saying, how could this be?
Right.
It's just too great to even say, no way one man's going to do that. Well, that's what he did.
That's what he did, and that's what he's leading to. Let's take another break. So we got a brand new sponsor, and I'm super excited about them, and I love their name, Pitbull Tactical. That's their name. I mean, that just sounds ferocious to me. Pitbull Tactical.
Tell me about it.
So what these guys do is that, you know, they help gun owners who kind of have the aggravation that you don't have the right mag carriers. So whether you're on the range or during everyday carry, one of the aggravations of gun owners is having the right mag carriers on hand, depending on what firearm you're going to be carrying that day. And so these guys have come up with a universal fix, anything from 9mm, 45 ACP. They've got it. It's called the Universal Mag Carry. It's from Pitbull Tactical. Hmm. Great name. Ambidextrous, fits inside or outside the waistband. Any 1.5-inch belt, you can carry it with you. 100% money-back guarantee. You're going to love it. Go to pitbulltactical.com. Use the offer code PHIL for a special introductory offer. You buy one, get the second one half price plus free shipping. Pretty good deal. pitbulltactical.com. That's pitbulltactical.com. Well, and I think that's what we said, every one of these sections, that they're kind of sectioned off in your Bible, but they weren't really sections. They were just him teaching and preaching. But if you notice, every one of these, when he makes one of these challenges, just like what we just talked about, if you do the right thing, it leads you into the next thing, you would get it. Because if you're humble, then look at verse 7. He says, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks, the door will be open. Well, you can never realize any of those blessings of opportunity unless first you're humble.
Yeah.
Which is what he's been challenging every step of the way.
He gets to the halfway point, chapter 7, in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. And check this out. For this sums up the law and the prophets. You're like, do what? You say, do to others as you would have them do to you.
Right.
And you say, that'll sum up all this. Children obey their parents. Never use God's name in vain. Don't bow down to idols. Children love their parents. Work 6 days, rest one. Don't murder each other. Don't commit adultery out there. Don't lie. Don't steal. And don't covet. He said, and he says right here, if you'll just do to others what you'd have them do to you, he said, it'll fulfill that whole thing.
Correct.
And they're like, they're like, impossible. What in the world are you talking about?
But I think they were having a problem when he said that sums up the law and the prophets, because they're sitting there thinking, well, who are you to sum up the law and the prophets?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Which I think is his underlying point, because he's trying to say, I'm the human revelation of God. Trust me in these matters.
But he was in a human body, and they're saying,
well, would you believe it if somebody pulled up and said, let me explain to you about right and wrong?
I think I would believe it after about the third miracle. I would say
it would take three
miracles.
One may do it. But in my case, I said, well, he slicked me somehow or another, but because he couldn't have done that, really. But but you start looking at the miracle, you say, how long has that guy been blind? He's you know, his whole life. And he can see now, you know, 5,000 people just in the, he's just making bread and fish, and it's just, and they're saying,
well, everybody has this conspiracy theory.
Walk on water. That would do it for me, I think, if I just watched that.
I think when there's a bunch of water there, and all of a sudden you're drinking wine. I was like, huh? Where'd that wine come from?
But you know what? Beyond the miracles, though, I mean, I think what Jesus, one of the biggest evidence that he was who he said he was that he is speaking to the dilemma of all humanity. Because I think he's making a case here through the Sermon on the Mount and really the whole his whole presence on earth was that, like, you can't do it. Like, it's almost a hopeless message, and then he gives you the way, which is himself, the personification of God in flesh. But because you think about when he talks about adultery, it's not just don't commit adultery. What does he say? You've heard it say don't commit adultery.
Yep.
I'm here to tell you that don't even lust after a woman in your heart, or if you commit it. So he's up in the ante. He's up in the game to where when he gets through describing what it means to be righteous, nobody's going to be left standing but him.
Oh, and right.
I think that's the point he's making.
Yeah, I think that's the point. Because he's conveying that I know what's in your mind.
Right.
Well, that's a scary thing for people who have been thinking about a lot of bad things.
It says in many places Jesus read their minds. He knew what they were thinking.
But if he's saying I'm God, well, God knows all. He's claiming to know what the prophet said, what the law means, and how judgment's going down. That you're pretty well in charge. That's why I think people who go in here and try to pick apart all the different commands and make them practical, they're missing the whole point. It was more about, I have this authority. You have the rest of your life to read these red letters and figure it out. But if you put your trust in Jesus as the one who has the authority and you keep reading this, you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You'll figure it out where you're least comfortable. That's why a lot of people, they argue about this because they're like, well, don't judge me. Matthew 7.
Yep.
And then you got religious people saying, oh, yeah, I'm judging you. 1 Corinthians 5. Because it says, judge those who are inside the church. Now, it does say, don't judge those outside. That's God's business. So, and people thought, well, why would Jesus say this in Matthew 7 if Paul says this in 1 Corinthians 5? Because it's a different situation. Here's a person who has claimed that Jesus has the authority and power of their life, but their life is showing that evidently they don't believe Jesus knows everything. You see, their life is in complete violation with the authority that they said they were trusting in.
Right.
So you say, what do? You have a different conversation than you would with someone in the world. In the world, we share Jesus. That's why I stay out of all social issues and lifestyle issues, because I'm like, well, if you get hooked on Jesus, you'll work that out. You'll realize that those changes will be made. But if you're claiming Jesus is Lord and you're singing on Sunday and then Monday, it is obvious that Jesus is not your Lord. And he kind of made that mention in 1 Corinthians 5. Well, then that's a different conversation.
Right.
And it's not like you go to the street corner or, you know, throw rocks at them, but you go into a room in love and say, what are you doing?
Yeah, I think a lot of people use the whole don't be judgmental passages, certainly out of context, but a lot of Christians do that, and it's the fear of being marginalized by society. It's the desire to be relevant. And on some level, I mean, if you follow the teachings of the Bible, you're not going to be accepted by the world. And I think we have to come to grips with that because it's difficult to absorb that, but it's true. But I think that being judgmental, like, I'm not casting judgment on somebody if I tell them what God says. You know, if I'm just telling you what the law said, I'm telling you what it is. I'm not the one casting the judgment, but here is what the message of the cross. And I think where people get mad about this is that it is offensive because what Jesus is ultimately saying here is that you are not God. And that's offensive to people who want to be God. It was offensive to me until I repented. And then when I repented, now I see it's beautiful. But it wasn't beautiful when I was living in sin because I was fighting against God. I wanted to be God. But it was a few. Like Phil says, I'm beating against the air. You always quote that verse. I'm a man, like I'm beating against the air.
Yep.
You're not getting anywhere. So I think it's so relevant. That's why I said the ultimate apologetic for God, for Christ, is that he's actually speaking to our dilemma. You know, he is speaking to what we're all facing, which is the unattainable righteousness that we long for, we can't get it.
And that's statement in the middle of that chapter 7, Jace, it's the scariest text in the Bible. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life. And according to Jesus, only a few find it. You boys can pontificate on that one, but every time I read that one, I'm like, only a few find it. I said, how much are a few? And nobody seems to know, and I don't either.
But well, there's a few would be a lot.
There's 7.2 billion.
But in the history of the world, every human, if you added them up, a few of those would be a pretty good many.
Let's take our last break.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flare over it that I wouldn't be seated. So I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to Reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.
You got the parable of the sower, so maybe it's about 25%.
Good answer.
Possibly.
Ooh, I like that.
That's probably true. Well, and look, he definitely makes a shift here because, as Jay says, the verse 12 is kind of the bumper sticker moment when he says,
yep,
if you'll treat people like you want to be treated, you know, that sums everything up. Then he shifts, and you notice he starts with the gates and the roads, and for the rest of this sermon, he gives you two choices every time. Pick this one or pick that one.
Yep.
He's going to go through these three or four little different illustrations about it. And so I think his point is more the idea, choose me, but realize that more people will not choose me than will choose me. And I think the proof was in the pudding, because look, when he gets to his crucifixion, how many people hung around and really believed? I mean, a lot of
pretty
people,
well, everybody hit the road.
I mean, they almost, including his own disciples.
But I think you got to keep this in perspective. Look, this is in light of him introducing a relationship with God, not a rule keeping system, which is what they had. And now he's introducing the kingdom of heaven. And we know fast forward that he's thinking when you get his spirit in you, you're now a part of this, and you have a counselor. Because some of these verses, if you try to figure out, like, how many is the few, or I mean, when I read that, I think you better make sure you go through the right gate.
Correct.
That's
what I'm saying.
That's all that really matters.
It's choice. It's always a choice.
And when you look at John's version, he says the same thing, but he would focus where Jesus said, "I am the gate." I mean, that was his point. And even about this ask, seek, and knock, because a lot of people are confused by this. They'll read this, verse 7 and 8, "For everyone who asks receives, he who seeks find him who knocks, the door will be open." Well, I can give you thousands of people who will say, "Well, I asked God, and I didn't receive it." What about that? What about unanswered prayer? And so my point is, when you seek first the kingdom and God is reigning in your life, you ultimately are receiving anything you ask, because all the major stuff is victory for you. Now, it may not look like victory, may not feel like victory, or it may look like God said no, which maybe he did say no.
He didn't have to say yes.
Well, right. But you know what I mean?
Sometimes the blessing is in the no, Jay. It's like, and then he uses a parent situation. He said, well, if a kid goes and asks for fish, would you give him a snake? So what he's saying is, when you parent your own children, they ask for things all the time. And sometimes you say yes, sometimes you say no. But ultimately, you're looking out for their greater well-being. And he uses that comparison from God.
Well, we read that last podcast. Well,
hey, Garth Brooks said it, right? "Sometimes I thank God for unanswered prayers." Garth Brooks hit it right. You remember that song?
He's a great theologian.
I've never listened to Garth Brooks.
Well, back in the '90s, he was the. That's the song. He shows up at the high school football game, sees his girlfriend from high school, and he's like, whoa, I'm glad he didn't marry her. So he prayed to marry her, but when he saw her, you know, 20 years later, he's like, whoa, thank
you. Well, I wasn't aware of that song, but that's now my favorite song, because I've seen a couple of girls I dated too. And yeah. Thank God for unanswered prayer. That's pretty good. Is he the one that did a Go Rest High on the Mountain?
No, that was Vince Gill.
Oh.
The only thing I remember about Garth Brooks is they made a statue of him out in front of a Bass Pro Shop out of butter.
Out of butter?
Yeah, they had like a carnival, you know what I mean? And it was like
a statue.
He's like how do you not know who he is? He's like the greatest country music. He's probably one of the top selling country music artists in history.
They didn't play him on the Southern Rock station, the only one we had as a kid. And we had the little radio with the work. The only thing we had, I got CCR, Leonard Skinner. And I just never got into it.
Yep. We missed the Garth Brooks run.
Yeah. Then I started listening to Christian music, and I just bypassed the Garth Brooks.
Well, I was wondering why the joke fell flat. I'm looking at you guys, and people are just looking back at me. I'm like, that was funny.
I'm like Phil with a cell phone. At this stage, I'm over 50, and I've never listened to Garth Brooks. Why should I just ruin that now?
It's a classic country, I guess, or a classic for his era. So did the butter melt? Like, was he in a hot
plate? I
was wondering how that worked out.
This is a fair. You know, when you go to the county
fair. But was it a hot plate? Like, if it was summertime.
Well, you had corn on the cob, and you go up there, and they were using the statue to butter their various.
Boy, now you talk about
fast food.
You talk about country fixings. We're going to butter our corn on the butter statue of Garth Brooks.
America.
I mean, I did think that was cool, but
that's pretty fun.
That's about the only thing I know about Garth Brooks.
You know, you've arrived if you get a butter statue.
If you're a statue of butter, because I think that's where in anything in the cooking line you start with butter.
It had to have been in Iowa, because that's where all the corn is. Probably the Iowa State Fair.
I saw that somewhere, and I thought, oh, that's interesting.
Yep.
I forgot what I was going to say. I had a really good point that y'all
took this podcast off the rails.
I derailed it.
What was I going to say?
We got a minute and 15 seconds to say.
So I haven't been able to say anything in a minute and 15 seconds in my life.
That's why I can't even clear my throat in that period of time.
Yeah. So where are we headed from here?
So where we're going
to get a teaser.
The teaser is we're going to look at these last three or four choices, because he's going to talk about fruit. He's going to talk about what we actually build a foundation
on. Trees.
I remember what I was going to say. No, my son, I won't say, one of my kids one time, I was trying to figure out what happened. Teacher called and said, one of your kids was involved in this and that. So I say, oh, okay. And so I put all the pieces to the puzzle together while my kid was sitting there. And they said, well, you're just judging me. You can't prove this. And because Matthew 7, you know, stop judging me. I said, but I know why you did it and how you did it. So, yeah, I'm making a judgment. Is that what you were doing? And is that why you were doing it? He's like, well, yeah, but you're still judging me, which is not right.
Boy, he had learned.
But it made me think of that verse, because I thought that's what people do. They're like, you know, we live in a place where you're not guilty unless it's proven in a court of law, which I appreciate that as an American citizen. But in God's eyes, he knows why you did it, when you did it, where you did it, how you did it.
Yeah.
And what you think about doing it.
Into your early
In God's eyes, you're guilty.
Oh, well, he knows. So why would you try to live like that didn't happen? And which is, I feel like that's what Jesus was attacking there.
And to your earlier point, yours and Zach's, the reason he could say that with full authority is because he is the judge.
Well, I think that's
you
the
can't
overlying
do what
point.
I can do because you're not me.
Don't miss the forest for the trees on the Sermon on the Mount.
Perfect. Next time we'll talk about trees.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, Subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.